welcome to The Logstat, the Army's premier podcast on all things sustainment, where we analyze new developments, discuss current trends, and forge the path ahead for the next generation of sustainment soldiers. Hello, everyone. Welcome back to another episode of The Logstat. I'm your host, Captain Garrett Pyle. As we continue to kick off 2026, I found it only fitting to review some of the lessons learned from 2025 to prepare us for this new year. The area in which we will focus on today is deployment operations. Back in episode 21, Deployer's Toolbox, Your Success from Port to Port with Mr. Stacy Lee, we discussed the Deployer's Toolbox as a Deployment Process Modernization Office, DPMO, developed to assist units with all phases and aspects of the deployment process. I highly recommend you check out that episode if you haven't already. Now today, we're going to be discussing another product that the DPMO publishes annually called the Annual Deployment Trends Report. This report provides a variety of lessons learned and best practices from across the field from the previous year. And with me today to discuss this report and to ensure units are fully ready to conduct deployment operations is Dr. Stuart W. Bentley, who currently serves as a military analyst with CASCOM's Deployment Process Modernization Office. Dr. Stuart W. Bentley is a former infantry and a military intelligence officer, and he has a Master's of Strategic Intelligence degree from the National Intelligence University. His previous publications include articles in intelligence, Army History, Military Intelligence, TRADOC's Mad Scientist Laboratory, and the USMA's Modern War Institute. I'm so excited to have you on the show today, sir. Welcome.
Thank you, Captain. I appreciate the opportunity to be able to speak to you and a wider audience about DPMO and current deployment trends.
So I know our audience really enjoyed our first episode with the DPMO office, so I'm excited to have you on to continue that dialogue, because this really affects not just the sustainment community, but the entire military community at large, because deployments is everybody. It's not just sustainment, even though I know we hold a large role of that, because we're moving everybody.
Absolutely.
So today, can you tell us, the audience, because we start off, like, really what the intent of the annual deployment trends report that your office compiles every year?
Sure thing. So what we're looking at broadly is how the Army, when they conduct exercises, how they're deploying, and what observations they've gleaned, and any lessons learned, so that we can provide that across the Army. Because although units are going to do things differently, depending on the installation, depending on the infrastructure they have, there's always room for improvement. And our goal here is to provide recommendations, and it's not the poke in the eye criticisms, but to be fair and balanced as far as how the Army deploys and what they can do better.
So you're going out there saying, hey, you did this bad, you did that bad. It's just...
We are not a CTC. We are not the observer controllers out there to paint anybody as the bad guy.
But you're sitting there providing, hey, this is what worked, this is what didn't work, these are some good things that are happening, maybe this is some good things that, or these are some things that didn't go well. Just really provide the force an overview of, hey, this is how we can be better next year.
Absolutely.
So where do you get your input from the report then from?
So the audience probably familiar with certain venues like the Fort Leavenworth Center for Army Lessons Learned. There's a great database out there that you can search for after-action reports. We also conduct internal evaluations from our Deployment Excellence Award and the former Emergency Deployment Readiness Exercise Program that FORSCOM, the former FORSCOM, used to host. We also listen to various podcasts, and we do have online surveys on the Deployer's Toolbox that we encourage mobility warrant officers and unit mobility officers to take part in and give us their anonymous feedback, as well as published documents, primarily after-action reports, and sometimes very critical Army Audit Agency reports.
Okay. So do you do anything like when your team goes out and interacts with units, do you pull any of that information into your reports?
Absolutely. We'll do an after-action report based on the unit that we have gone and evaluated. And we usually have more than one person out evaluating, and we'll pool our notes, make sure that we saw and heard the same things. We think it's very critical to be on the ground, in the motor pools, at the airfields, at the railheads, watching, listening, learning sometimes how units are tackling different challenges as they come up. And, of course, the big thing, too, is we're looking for safety, because that's soldiers are really at risk when they're in those kind of venues, and we want to make sure that nobody gets hurt or worse.
Yeah, and I remember from our previous episode on is where your team learns a lot from the field. Some of your items that's on its force toolkit came from the field that you saw units that are utilizing.
It's absolutely correct. And when we get to talking about the toolbox a little bit later, I'm going to address that with the audience more generally.
So now for this report, does it focus just on CONUS, or do you also look at units that are OCONUS that are maybe are doing deployment operations?
That's a great question. We do look Army-wide. We look across the enterprise. The things I'm looking specifically for are exercise AARs, trying to figure out what units are prepared for, what they weren't prepared for, and what maybe some of the shortcomings were. I mean, everybody loves a success story. But the harder thing to do is look at the things that you didn't do well and what are the things that you could do better in the future.
Exactly. So what are some of the primary trends that you've identified for, FY25?
So I'm going to run through each one of these very quickly, and then I'll come back and address them in more detail. So the first one is inconsistent adherence to established Army deployment regulations and processes. That's the first one. The second one is a command focus on CDDP, or the Command Deployment Discipline Program. The third one is deployment as an operation. In other words, units treating the deployment process as an operation. The fourth one is deploying non-mission capable equipment, either to real-world scenarios or to CTC rotations. The last one is inaccurate deployment data. So you get back to the first one. What are we talking about? Army deployment regulations and processes. There's a lot of regulations out there. There's a lot of processes out there, and I get it. It's information overload. But here's what I like to tell people is that process brings order out of chaos. You don't have to guess at how to do these things. They're all written out there. They're all in a publication or in a checklist somewhere. The key is to be able to go through it, pull out what you need. This isn't a case where you have to read every single document that's there, every AR, every FM. That's not the goal. What you can do is you can go into the Adobe Acrobat version and do that critical search if you don't know. The other thing to keep in mind is that you do have a support staff or support people out there who can help you through this or answer your questions or point you in the right direction. And those are people like your ITO, the Installation Transportation Office, your mobility warrant officers, both from the division on down, as well as your trained unit mobility officers. The point is, this takes all the guesswork out of the equation. You don't have to do a fly-by-night, seat-of-your-pants solution. Everything's already there. You just got to find the right tool and use it appropriately.
And I know when I was, back when I was a second lieutenant, during my time when I was a UMO, I know I got a lot of good information from the COMET teams that I had down when I was at Fort Hood. They helped me out immensely when I was going through and had to build my UMO binder, help me through all the different regulations. So I know that for me, that was another great resource to use.
Well, you bring up a good point too, that it's important that you, in whatever your role is as a UMO or as an MWO, that you're not going to be there forever. So that having a continuity book, something that you can pass on to your successor, because you may have some overlap time with that person, you may not. And what you don't want to do is just leave a gap in the institutional knowledge where the other person has to come in and start from scratch. So I'd make that plug.
Yeah, that seems like the we can go on a whole different topic.
Yes, we could.
But I do know that's something that the units really do struggle with, because they assign somebody as a UMO. It's usually the brand new lieutenant.
Yes.
And then they instantly leave, and then there's a gap. And there's another gap.
That's correct. So the next one is command focus on the CDDP. And so I won't go into great detail on this, because there has been an entire handbook written about this program. But needless to say, what we're really trying to get at is we want commanders to treat deployment as an operation. And the two primary areas of focus for CDDP are formal and informal evaluations to see how units are doing at all echelons. The other piece of this is conducting deployment readiness exercises, level one, level two, which are required in the regulations. But these help organizations practice what they would be doing real world, either CTC rotations or for large-scale mobility or mobilization operations. So CDDP helps focus units on reviewing the organizational equipment list, or the OEL, movement plans, load teams, hazmat certifications, and unit movement officer orders. This also provides a check of procedures used to process unit movement data. The next one is deployment as an operation. And thankfully, I don't have to go into great and gory detail on this, because I just wrote and had published an article in this current issue of Sustainment Magazine that encourages commanders to treat deployment as an operation. What I like to say about this aspect is that sometimes we're focused so much on getting to the line of departure, crossing it, and engaging and destroying the enemy. Well, how did you get to the line of departure? And that's where the deployment processes need to be exercised and need to be rehearsed. And it has to be a priority, because otherwise, like I said, without order, you have chaos. So the next major trend is deploying non-mission capable equipment. Now, there's a whole range of terms and information and even a spectrum that's out there about non-mission capable equipment. So the biggest aspect about this, think about it this way, is that if you take an NMC piece of equipment on a deployment with you and it can't make it onto the conveyance because it has to be towed or pushed, then when it's going to end up sitting in the frustrated cargo lots. It's either not going to get on the plane, it's not going to get on the ship, or even if it does, once it gets to the destination, that's where it's going to sit, because the unit is expecting it to be repaired once it gets either in country or to the CTC. So you're asking a commander to go in at less than 100% strength from the get-go. You don't want to leave, we don't want to leave our tanks and our Bradleys sitting on the dock in Bremerhaven while we're going off to conduct combat operations. It's just a non-starter. So how do you overcome that? You overcome that by A, real-time maintenance. I always say maintenance is training and training is maintenance. So we've got to overcome that particular challenge. And it's by devoting enough time and resources to ensuring that our equipment is always ready to go.
Yeah, think about how much money and just money and time wasted by sending something that's broken forward.
That we could do a whole different podcast on that. It's insane how much money is being spent to remedy that. So the last one is inaccurate deployment data. Think about it this way. When a piece of equipment is moved, either on a vessel or aircraft or line haul, that the dimensions of that piece of equipment have to be measured, have to be weighed, and then it has to fit somewhere on that method of conveyance. And anybody who's ever done any kind of movement, either by ship or by aircraft, knows how critical that is. Airplane can't take off if it's overloaded. The ship is not going to sail correctly if it's not loaded correctly. Weight distribution, height, dimensions, all these things are important, and they can't be guessed at. And too often, that's what we see in the field. That ends up leading to frustrated cargo, which means, like NMC equipment, you're not going to be deploying into theater with all of your necessary equipment.
So on that, then, I know the term, people have heard the terms out there, OEL and UDL. I know that all ties into what we're talking about right now. Can you kind of explain to the audience what those terms mean and like the impacts they have? And
absolutely. So the OEL is the organization equipment list. That's what you have. That's derived from your property book. That's the stuff that anybody who's been a commander knows has to be laid out and signed for. So you can imagine how important that is. So the unit deployment list, the UDL, is derived from the OEL. Now, some units, depending on what their function is, combat arms, combat support, whatever the case might be, they may not take everything on their OEL, which makes sense. They're going to take the things that they need to accomplish the mission. And that's where the UDL comes from. So the unit deployment list is the list that of all the items that you're going to take, prime movers, secondary movers, all of the other equipment, and then how it's going to be conveyed. Some of it is going to be palletized. Some of it's going to be put in a container, depending on what it is, if it's a sensitive item or whatever the case might be. So ensuring the accuracy of the UDL, make sure that you get all of your equipment shipped and it doesn't end up as frustrated cargo, either at the point of embarkation or debarkation.
And I just said, that just highlights how critical that having your UDL up to date, ready to go, is really going to help get after some of these trends that we just went over. So on that, what are some of the most critical elements associated with deployment challenges, like, and how do we overcome those?
So there's a lot of chat, a lot of talk today about large-scale mobilization operations in a contested homeland environment, which again could be another podcast, which I won't go into detail about. However, what that means for us in the deployment and the sustainment community is units mobilizing and deploying in the face of competition for limited resources on installations which may not be capable of supporting the effort large scale within the expected time frame. We know every installation is different. We say it at Fort Bragg, if it doesn't fly, we don't care. That's obviously an overstatement, but it's kind of true. With the emphasis on airborne operations and the 82nd, then everything's flying. So there's not a lot of attention paid to railhead operations. But Fort Bragg, 18th Airborne Corps, recognize that. One of the things they're doing is to address the issue they have with rail operations is they've closed down Stryker Golf Course and they're expanding the existing railhead. So there is recognition that there are challenges out there. How they overcome them is dependent on the installation.
Well, where am I going to golf now?
There is, for all you golfers, there is another golf course on Fort Bragg. So you're not entirely out of luck. But, you know, the flip side of that is the railhead at Fort Hood, which is huge, as you would expect.
Yeah, but I've had a lot of experience working the railhead at Fort Hood. This is where I first started at. So from really analyzing this report, like, what conclusions or main takeaways should units gather?
So the first thing I would encourage the community is to follow established processes and procedures, because that takes the guesswork out of the equation. Again, it brings order out of chaos. The second thing is that integrating deployment into regular exercises helps create muscle memory and institutional knowledge. We know that with rotations, personnel assignments, there is a lot of turnover, as you mentioned yourself. So the more that we can reinforce institutional knowledge, and by creating that muscle memory through training and exercise, the better off we will be. The other thing I want to address is that the tools for successful deployment are out there, and they're largely in the DPMO deployer's toolbox. And so I encourage everybody to go onto our site and take a look at it and look at all those different tools that are out there.
So besides, like, you know, we had a great episode on the deployer's toolbox, how else can units be successful in deploying going forward from learning from all these lessons and best practices?
So the big things are to plan, train, rehearse, exercise, evaluate, and then start the process again. It's a training cycle, just like anything else that the Army does. And again, as I mentioned earlier, conducting level one and two EDRIs will help units train for those deployments and be prepared for it. So keep in mind that collective training is just as important as individual training. And a collective training on deployment can be as simple as filling out load cards for secondary loads, practicing rail tie-downs for vehicles, safety training on ground guiding, both on rail cars and in staging areas, and then individual training, such as making sure that individuals who are assigned to those duties, such as UMO, have been properly trained on hazmat and the automated systems that are used during deployment, because those things are often overlooked. We are developing a non-CAC deployer's toolbox to enable widespread use of all the available unclassified deployment tools. We want to put that in front of the CAC firewall so that every soldier with a mobile device can take a look at the deployer's toolbox real time and be able to use the information either while they're in the motor pool or while they're on the railhead, preferably not on top of the rail car, but in a safe way. But seriously, we want to get these tools out there available to everyone. And feedback from our users is very important to us. Matter of fact, last week I had some tools that I got from the 3rd Infantry Division, which I posted on the deployer's toolbox after I cleaned them up, because I do know that we don't want to put unit-specific information out there to the public generally. So again, we have to keep our eye on the classification level and just make sure that this information is properly released.
So a few things that I want to hit on that you just kind of discussed. One is, like, when you talk about the level one, level two, DREs and stuff, like, you can easily be, every time you go to the field, you can be doing those. It's all about sets and reps.
Yes, so absolutely.
Anytime you're out there doing a field training exercise, or if you would do a part of your motor pull Monday, that's part of, like, hey, just practicing when you're rolling equipment through and you're doing your PMCS, rolling through, doing your checks. Like, it's just finding unique ways to do multiple trainings all in the same time. So be creative out there. And the next part I want to hit on is, like, I think that's a great opportunity that you guys are working on right now, is getting the deployer's toolkit that can be utilized across the board on mobile devices. I know we've talked about before in the last episode, like, it's not classified or so until it's get information put into it. All those forms. So be able to have access for soldiers can be able to read the regulations, have access to those forms and see the tools that are available to them. So while they're out there, they can just pull it up on their phone real quick, see what they need to be able to do, and then continue to conduct operations. So I think that's an awesome tool that you guys are working on right now. So is there anything else that we missed today that you wanted to kind of talk about when it comes to this report or deployment operations?
The last piece that I'd like to hit on, and I say this from having personally observed operations in the field in my role as a military analyst, is that depending on your role, whatever it is, that you should work not just to support your commander and staff, but also to educate them and even champion what you bring to the table. In other words, you have to sell what you do to the unit that you are supporting. And you need to think of your role not just as a support function, but also as an operational one. And That means pushing your case. You work for your commander, you support him, but the commander has to understand what you do and what you bring to the table. Don't assume automatically that they'll know, even if they've had a UMO or an MWO in the past. And again, I want to thank you for the opportunity to address the audience.
Of course, sir. Is there any other wisdom you have for the sustainment community from all your years, either on the uniform side when you're in the infantry or military intelligence, or just from deployment stuff that you want to provide to us?
I think that the challenge is that as much as things have changed in the Army, especially in the IT field and what's available through automation, that not a lot has changed. And that's good and bad as well. But again, I would encourage people, take the guesswork out of this. If I've been on active duty, I certainly wish that I'd had these tools available to me, because they would have taken the guesswork out of things. And again, you don't have to fly by the seat of your pants in figuring these things out.
I know we've discussed a lot today, and I really highly recommend people check out this report when it does come live on the DPML website here coming in January of 26, for themselves to really get an even more in-depth analysis of the trends. But where can people find you if they have any additional follow-up questions? You know, they can send their cards and letters to.
Sure. So on the Army Information Hub in SharePoint, you can just type in Deployment Process Modernization Office into the search engine, and that will bring you to our main site.
Perfect. And they'll be able to come find you all there. And we'll put that as well in the show notes. Some people will be able to clearly be able to search that. But I really do want to thank you for, you know, taking the time to provide an understanding of this report and just really the trends that your team was able to analyze from FY25. One of the themes that I constantly discuss is how we must always learn from our past to ensure the success of our future. And that's what we did today. But once again, thank you so much.
Thank you, Gavin Pyle.
And for anyone out there that just recently went through deployment operations or soon to be, then be sure to reach out to the DPMO team. They want to hear your stories and how they can continue to share best practices from across the force and ensure that we continue to increase our lethality. Also, write about your experiences and submit them to the Army Sustained Professional Bulletin. The team is here ready to help you shape your next article. But that is all we have today, folks. As always, sustained leaders start here. See you next time. Thank you for listening to another episode of The Logstat. We hope you enjoyed today's conversation. Please share this episode across your formation and leave us a review. If you have a topic you like here discussed, then please reach out to us at armysustainment@army.mil or directly to me on Global at garrett.h.pyle. Follow us on Facebook, X, and LinkedIn at Army Sustainment. We'll see you next time. Sustainment leaders start here.